Hey, what's good, everyone? This is Rich, and I'm here with Wim, and you're listening to the Paychecks and Balances podcast, where we talk work and money for the rising professional without boring you to sleep. What's going on, good sir?
Out here living the dream, man. You know how it goes. Stumbling my way through the quarter life crisis.
Yeah, man. I feel like I've gotten some serious lessons in adulting over the past couple of weeks, and I'll talk about that in a moment from the trenches. Well, the segment that we call From the Trenches. But yo, you mentioned something on a previous episode, and I was talking about moving into this new spot and having hardwood floors and how great it was going to be. And I told you this offline, but I feel like I need to say it online too. You were right. The hardwood floors are so unforgiving. I still got to go buy some fuzzy slippers or something like that so I can have that extra comfort. And I really feel it the most when I'm going down the stairs, like walking down hardwood stairs with flat feet, no give, no give at all.
Man, I tried to warn you, but I'm not going to do it that I told you so, because you're a man about it and you recognize it. And, you know, it is what it is. It's crazy that that's something I have to take into consideration. I definitely had to. I even stepped the normal flip flop house shoe game up that I would invest in. Like, I had to go to like the special above normal grade, and I don't know what grade house shoes come in, but I didn't like get the one. I basically got top shelf house shoes.
What does that even mean? Is it like extra layer of cushion from some U.S. origin place?
Yeah, I'm trying to look at them now, man. But yeah, they weren't like, normally I would just go in there and buy the first thing I got my hands on. But me and the missus actually at the time, because we both bought a pair, like we were like trying them on in the store. We're like, are we sure this is going to be like, we need some extra padding and cushion. So yeah, it was a situation. I tried to warn you, but it's just one of those things you got to see for yourself.
Yeah, man. So I love the spot. I love having the hardwood floors. I was just unprepared for the lack of give and what that has done for my feet, ankles, lower leg, and back. Yes, back too, somehow. Like, actually, when I walk down the stairs, it actually looks like I'm hobbling. Like, I'm completely fine, but it's like, because there's no give. So yo, I'm looking forward to making that purchase.
Speaking of unforgiving, I was watching, have you seen that Mr. Glass meme with Derrick Rose's face on there, you know, from the internets?
Nah, I haven't. But you mean Mr. Glass is in the Unbreakable movie?
Yeah, yeah. So there's a video floating around, and it's like, be careful on the L train or something like that. And it shows that scene where Mr. Glass was trying to walk down the steps. And it's like Derrick Rose's face. He's like, oh. Yeah, yeah, it was. Yeah, I'm like, really, internet? That's what we do it. That's what we do with our lives. I feel like that's too far. I don't know where too far is, but I feel like that's it.
Yo, internet has no chill. I mean, we know that, and it will never start to chill or never cease. Oh, that's not what I meant to say. Internet has no chill. We'll leave it at that. I wasn't able to string the words together the way I wanted.
I think I follow.
Cool. So in terms of pre-show announcements, if you've been enjoying the show or believe in what we're doing, definitely hit us up with a 5-star review on iTunes. It helps Paychecks and Balances get more visibility, which means we'll reach more people. And if we reach more people, we'll help more people. So if you don't know how to leave us a 5-star review, you can visit paychecksandbalances.com/review for instructions. It's pretty simple. Go into the iTunes, type in the show name, hit us with the 5 stars in the reviews tab, say a few words about the show, and off you go. So anything you want to add up front before we start getting into the mix today?
I don't think so. We're not for announcements.
Cool, man. So From the Trenches. So this is a new segment that I introduced a few episodes back, and it's not something that we'll do regularly unless we have something every week. I need to work on pronouncing my G's. But you may have noticed that we haven't dropped an episode in a couple of weeks if you've been a regular listener to the show. And that's been completely due to me. I've had some stuff going on outside of work. As I mentioned earlier, I've been adulting in a way that I haven't had to adult in quite some time. And it's been one of the toughest periods that I've had emotionally, mentally, and in some ways physically. So podcasting has been the last thing on my mind. And it actually reminded me of a couple of things that we've talked about on the show, or that the show is about in general. And it just made me think about kind of the reprioritization of values. And, you know, how normally, you know, I'm thinking about, oh, we got to get an episode out. If we don't get an episode out, I'm stressed. Oh, I got work stuff to do. If I don't get work done, I'm not shining. I'm not progressing on these goals. And all of that stuff fell by the wayside when I got some news about something that had happened. So spoiler, I'm okay. Boobalkins is okay. My mom okay, but there's other stuff that's going on. And Your Own Risk on Twitter talked about how we sometimes feel pressure to decide between work and personal life. And I felt like I've been experiencing that over the past couple of weeks where, you know, I got this news and pretty much since then my mind has been all over the place. I've been at work, unable to focus. And I knew there were a few days that I definitely shouldn't have been in the office, but for whatever reason, I felt like I still had to be there. Like things weren't going to get done. And by me not being there, I was only going to fall further behind when really I should have just said, you know what? Family, whatever else is going on comes first. Let me get out of the office. Let me get out of town rather than sticking around for an additional few days because I'm trying to tie things up. So, I guess it's kind of like just a reminder of the importance of knowing where your values are and especially with work. You know, my boss came back from a vacation and was like, look, work is going to be here when you get back. Right now, you need to be out of the office. It's clear that you're not doing the best given all of the stuff that's going on. Disconnect. And I think that's something that a lot of people struggle with, young, old. I've had a boss in the past who had all sorts of things going on outside of work and was at the point where this person was basically getting lightheaded and woozy in the office. And it was like, yo, you got to be able to disconnect. And then, you know, I wasn't that bad, but found myself in a situation where I'm like at work and people are saying stuff and I'm trying to expend energy being positive when I have my mind and all of these other things, when the right thing to do from the start would have been to disconnect. So I'm not sure if you've ever had a period like that or if you had to manage someone that was going through a period like that.
I think a little bit of both, and that I've gone through it and I've had to manage people like that. And I guess it's encouraging to hear that your boss was supportive of that, because I tried to be the boss of, or the boss that, you know, work's not going anywhere, and definitely putting it relative to life and what, you know, work's important, but what's important at that time. And yeah, I try to be sympathetic to what's going on in people's real life, and not to say they are discount work, but I'm just like, you can come back to this anytime. And that's not always the case with some of the things that happen outside of the job.
Yeah. You know, and my boss said something that kind of really put it in perspective that I think will be helpful to other people when they have this struggle of like, do I go tend to this other thing? And in this case, I have something that happened to a family member, and I'm going to be traveling home for that. And my boss was like, you're never going to regret going home, you know, and she was basically making this point that the work will be here. Yes, there's things that you'll miss, but you're never going to regret going home and spending that time with family, or looking back saying you wish you hadn't went home to spend that time with family. And that's my phone going off at a very inopportune time. I'm just going to swipe to the side and let that go.
Yeah, I could see that, man. And I like what I was saying. That's good to hear, because, you know, there's some jobs and some people are a combination of both where that would not be the case. And so that's actually good to hear. That's the feedback and advice you got. I feel like that's how it should be.
Yeah, man. I mean, and this is also the most supportive place that I've worked. And I was saying that for another reason, because I know when the shooting happened in Orlando, there was a big corporate communication that went out, and all of the affinity groups or multicultural groups had threads that were going on and discussion about it. And it's unlike anywhere I've worked before. And for those that don't know, I'm part of the Alphabet family of companies, which includes the internet. And I'm really thankful to have that type of support. And it's something that if I ever was to think about going elsewhere, I would have to seriously consider, am I going to have that level of support? Is there this level of network and this level of community where I feel like if something's going on personally or something happens to a group that I'm a part of, because there have also been extensive conversations about some of the shootings and things that have been happening in the United States in particular, I've always felt like I had somewhere to go if I needed that support at work. And that's not something that everyone has. And it's not something that I've really felt as strongly in any of the jobs that I've had previously. Now, the other thing that this whole incident made me think about was the money side of things. Now, you know, I have a savings account. It's not the most bountiful savings account, but I have some money in savings. And this is one of those events where now I have to travel back to the East Coast. And I didn't really think much about how much money that was going to cost. Well, of course, I wouldn't think about that because I wasn't expecting this to happen, which most people don't plan for these types of things. At least those who I know don't seem to be the best planners. But of course, there's always that like one person who's on top of everything. Like, yes, I've got 2 years of savings. And I'm like, yeah, good for you,
buddy. Doesn't everybody?
Yeah. I hate those people. I hate them. And it was kind of a reminder of just kind of why we do this show, because I'm looking at it now and I'm like, you know, I got to suddenly spend this extra $1,000, whatever it is, going to end up being more than that. Something I hadn't budgeted for at a time where I'm also about to go to a conference and spend even more money. And, you know, I'm not sitting here like, woe is me, I wish I had saved more and all depressed about it. But there are some things that had I started saving more aggressively sooner, or, you know, had I been more diligent about the savings plan that I've had in the past that suddenly fell off, I probably would have had more money and it wouldn't have been as big of a mental hurdle to be like, ah, man, I got to spend this money. How am I going to come up with this? How many months am I going to have to try to make up for what I'm about to spend for this unexpected trip home? And so I don't, in some way I was like, you know what? If I have to go through these thoughts, there are people that are listening that have to go through these thoughts or find themselves in situations where they want to be able to help family or want to be able to help friends more than they're able to at the moment. And there are ways to get to a position of being able to do that if you make the right decisions. I'd say even professionally and also financially, in terms of how you save, how you manage your debt, which card you have, and kind of how you prioritize your spending overall. So that's kind of like my in the trenches for this week. Not sure if you have anything to add there.
Well, I was just going to say the problem or the clarity that comes with hindsight, which is always the case, is that you don't, when you have the opportunity to put those funds aside and make those responsible decisions, it's not needed right then. It's kind of the opposite of instant gratification. So it's really difficult to say, well, I'm going to put money aside for an event that I might never, that actually might never occur. You know, it's like insurance. For that emergency, that's the emergency savings plan. I think there's been like a movement now, and I don't know how I feel about this because I feel like everything's gotten so shiny and soft and rainbows and unicorns. But it's, instead of a rainy day fund, it's supposed to be like rebranded as some sunny day fund. So whatever motivates you, but I think it's difficult to make those decisions because you're like, man, I'm putting this money aside when I could be doing X, Y, and Z with it. And then by the time you need it, when that emergency does arise, it justifies the need for it. And there's even, you know, that old proverb with the ant and the grasshopper. But I just think it's hard to make those proactive, positive decisions, even for yourself.
It is. And now it's like, all right, now that I've had something happen, best believe going forward that I'm going to be putting extra money away now. And in some ways I've started doing that already and had been doing it in recent weeks through an app that I'll talk more about on a future show. But now it's something that I'll think about because it's very real how much things can change. And I think in my case, this was one of the biggest reasons that I hadn't moved to California sooner, or that I never thought I would move to the West Coast, because I have always had the thought of, what if something happens at home? What if I'm not able to get there fast enough? What if I miss a really crucial time? And I thought about how much that might hang over my head if I were to miss something super critical, super important, or, you know, somebody was in a life-threatening situation, which fortunately that's not the case here. But now, but even having thought about that before, I still wasn't as diligent about saving money, knowing that the one thing that was my biggest fear could happen. I still wasn't as thoughtful in how I went about saving money for just in case something like that did happen. So let that also be a reminder to people, do as I say, not as I do. I mean, or I guess you can do as I do too, since I'm now trying to save more money. But yeah, that's about it, man. So it will be probably, and I'm pausing here because I just thought of something else. It'll probably be another couple of weeks before we drop an episode after this. So I'm going to spend this week, the week that this episode is coming out, on the East Coast visiting family. Then after that, I'll spend basically a week in Chicago at the Podcast Movement Conference, which I went to last year. looking forward to reconnecting with some of the people that I've met. And also, if you're a listener in Chicago and you're going to be around next week, definitely hit me up or hit us up via email, info@paychecksandbalances.com. Also hit me up on Twitter at @IamRichJones. I would love to connect with some folks while I'm there. So if you're not at the conference, would still like to find time to meet up with some folks outside of that and say what up. So I'll probably have a lot of orange and black with me. I kind of like OD'd with the paraphernalia for the conference. I'm basically trying to be a walking billboard, like this, the last shot we got.
Real, real, real. I respect that.
Yeah, man. Street's main topics for this week.
So I want to talk about an article that was sent over to @PayBalances from True Prototype. The listener has been following the show for a while, so appreciate the support.
Much respect, much respect.
And this was actually from NY Mag, Ask Polly, which I think they've been doing for a number of years. And what I couldn't figure out is if Ask Polly is a pseudonym or is it like multiple writers, because the author isn't Polly. I actually did look her up. She actually has some pretty good pieces. So I couldn't figure that out. Maybe somebody can clarify that for me. But the piece is titled, "My Husband Can't Handle Money." And this topic has come up in a number of different ways. It's probably the second or third most frequent, although asked in different ways, question that I hear when I'm kind of talking about debt management. And it basically revolves around, can you or how do you successfully manage debt, money, and or finances in a relationship? So you can, yes, and it's difficult. And it has always been difficult. And I have found no easier way to solve that equation. But I'm going to walk through like three tips that I would give and more or less lessons learned that I've seen and tried with varying degrees of success and failures as far as managing money within a relationship. So I'm not going to repeat the article. I will put it in the show notes. I did. So the question was, what do you think about this advice? I think the advice was good. I actually was surprised how straightforward the advice was. There's a few curse words in there and it's like, hey, you stop being stupid. And I think there's a couple of MFs and F-bombs dropped in there. So I was like, that's a interesting approach. So
that's probably how I would talk to someone. If I was actually having the conversation, I'd be like, yo, stop fucking around, man. Like,
yeah, that's pretty much exactly how it went. So yeah. I was surprised by that slant, but I'm not as familiar with the Ask Polly. Maybe that's how she rolls on all her responses, assuming this is one person. So it was straightforward. I think it was honest. I think it was good advice, but I think I wouldn't be doing y'all any favors just to repeat that back to y'all. So I'll send that information in the show notes.
Cool.
And then there's another article that I'll tie this together. And I think it's kind of thematic and actually ties somewhat to this conversation that we were having earlier as far as, I think saving money and paying off debt and building a rainy and or sunny day fund is really all the same. And I was going to say coin, but I realize a coin is two-sided. So tripod, I guess. It's all legs of the same monster, if you will. Well, I was trying to come up with something off the cuff that had
Cloverfield.
Three. Yes, it is the Cloverfield of the same coin. I think it's just all the discipline necessary to do so when there's not instant gratification from it. And what I continue to emphasize, and I almost said Debbie Downer, and I don't want to say Debbie Downer, but I can't think of another because that just sounds really corny. But I'm going to go with Debbie Downer because I can't.
No, it works, man. It's a reference that people get. It might have been used more than a few times, but it makes sense. Carry on.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the fact that
you're really not impressed with yourself on that one.
I'm not. I'm irritated. That's the first thing that came to my mind, actually. But it's true. Like, managing money is hard, and it's something I've even come to appreciate. So for those who are new to the show, and sorry for those who have heard this speech 1,000 times, haven't paid off $30,000 in debt. And that's why I talk about this topic. That's why I'm trying to get my detox album, AKA the book, out about this topic. But that being said, I've come to, and I greatly underestimated when I went through the first time, and I'm calling this next time season two. So now I'm going through season two of getting out of debt. I'm wiser, informed, and actually better off than I was before, but there's different life pressures going on now. So a lot of the pressures I had before in the other article I'm referencing is how your friends are killing your wallet and how to stop the sabotage from Forbes.com is saying no and recognizing that it is really a marathon and not a sprint. I just had in my head that I got out of debt. It's zero and I'll never have to deal with this again. I'll just be financially responsible for the rest of my life. No big deal. I'll put aside a rainy day fund, invest in my 401 and my 457, and then I'll retire in 35 years. Piece of cake. And then life was like, nah, playboy, I'll treat y'all, put some respect on my name. And life came at me with like left hooks and uppercuts and unplanned events. And it's like, yeah, you thought you was done with this? And I really have now, in my evolution of thinking and my lesson learned, is like, it doesn't stop. And that was really humbling for me, that life just keeps coming back at you in a different form. Like, hey, did you think about this? Hey, did you plan about that? And that's something that I actually did not plan for. And that wasn't a rainy day fund. That wasn't fiscal management. That wasn't debt management. That was just me underestimating that I have another, fingers crossed. And I actually almost stuttered earlier when I was like, is it a quarter life crisis or a midlife crisis now? Because
it's like a third life. Oh,
I think we're in the throes. I think we're in the throes of the midlife. Well, I'm not going to speak.
It's like a 40% life crisis or something.
Right, right. And like, it's just an interesting timeline in that it doesn't. I'm trying to be positive here, but it doesn't end. Like, it doesn't end. It just keeps going, and it can humble you at the most unplanned moments. And it has humbled me. I'm like, huh, I could have never planned for that. And now I'm dealing with a different set of skills, if you will, but different set of events at a different time period with different pressures for getting out in what is now my season two. And I actually think it's almost like I have to rewrite a book, because a lot of the things that I went through and then my early to mid 20s are applicable, but different. And it's almost like a series. Yeah. It's like your life, at least for me, is like if this was a DVD, this would be like when Walter White just got arrogant and went completely off the reins. So they're like, I'm going through my Breaking Bad minus the drugs experience. And it's like, I did not see that coming. And it's changed my opinion and thoughts on how I would even advise people at this point. And I think a lot of people can relate to that. But I think my baseline or foundation is like, this stuff is hard. Because I think when people are like, what's the easy way to do it? How can I get it done? How do I get to zero and never have to worry about it again? I'm like, well, that's not how it works. You can get to zero, but you'll have to put a lot of things into play to never have to worry about it again, because, you know, these life events happen, these emergencies happen, and different life events and emergencies happen as you progress in age and expectations and events that happen in you and around you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I am certainly one who can vouch for this point.
So as far as it pertains to marriage,
if you're like me, you probably hate grocery shopping. And if you're like me, you probably hate figuring out dinner every night. And that's where HelloFresh comes into play. So HelloFresh is the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking fun, easy, and convenient. Each week, HelloFresh creates new recipes with step-by-step instructions designed to take around 30 minutes for everyone from novice chefs like myself to seasoned home cooks. And one of the best things about this is if you're cooking just for yourself, each meal could last you 2 days. I discovered that when I was making this sizzling beef stir fry last week. I promise you, it really was sizzling. And if you're wondering how the food gets delivered, it arrives at your doorstep in a special insulated box for free. So for $35 off your first week of deliveries, visit HelloFresh.com and enter paychecks. Again, visit HelloFresh.com and enter paychecks when you subscribe. Check it out.
I think I'm going to go through this in like what I've broken down into three sections. So for me, I would say before you say I do's, you got to talk about the I don'ts. And I think a lot of people are really good about talking about the I do's and everything that they're going to do to make a marriage work and make a relationship work, hypothetically or in reality, if they're already married. But a lot of people, I don't feel like have a conversation about what they're not going to do. And I actually think those are equally important and in some cases, probably more important. So what I would say, and I've learned differently now, is I've been blindsided by some people's credit or lack of credit and the impact it's thus had on my life. And I think now, especially in the, I would say the society or culture we live in, at least asking in a serious relationship. I'm not saying on the first date, on your first $200 date, you ask about somebody's credit score, you know, at your discretion, you do whatever you want.
Sideways.
But in a serious relationship, I actually don't think that's the violation of privacy that it used to be back in the day, because getting it is so easy. It's like, I mean, it's an app away. And most my bank offers, like I literally have to turn down offers to see my credit score at this point. It's like, it's so easy to obtain. So I do think that that's something, and I don't think it's the end all be all. I don't think it's the SATs of your relationships, but it is more telling than I think I've given credit for in the past. And then if I was to, and I'm talking more now in a transition to a relationship, I would also either ask them to obtain or ask them to share their credit report. And a lot of people don't realize those are two different things. And they feed off one another, but your credit report gives your history for, I believe, the last 7 years. I know it gives the history of all the accounts you've opened and closed and still have open, and make sure that you're still in good standing. And most of those, first of all, you can obtain free every year. And we talked about this in a number of shows, but I'll put in the show notes again. You are legally entitled to have your credit report. And it doesn't even have your credit score on there, whereas your credit score is informed by a number of revolving accounts. And basically, one's a snapshot, what you've done today, and one's your history that led up to that snapshot. Snapshot being the credit score, the credit report being your history. And the do's and the don'ts I would be is, that I would recommend, is to have a financial conversation. And it's been the exception. I can really only think of twice that I actually sat down with somebody and really talked about what's important to us as far as finances go. What do I want to accomplish? What does she want to accomplish? And then what do we want to accomplish as a couple? But I think most importantly, and I think it comes across in this article, because she said her husband was never good with money. And that would be for me to observe, listen, watch, and then repeat, because I think people can change based on different pressures going on in their life. Mm-hmm. And I would observe and I would listen, but I didn't make any changes or comments, I think, to my own fault in the past. So I would watch somebody go out, spend a ridiculous amount of money that I know they didn't have, buy things I knew they couldn't afford. And I'm just like, oh, okay, well, I guess we'll work through that eventually. And I don't know when I thought that time would come, because it would probably have been rock bottom. Yeah. And I think it's hard to, you know, running with that metaphor, you know, tying yourself to someone that could possibly drown you in that particular instance, in this instance, drown you in debt. And I think it's important to have those types of conversations. And I don't think most people do. I don't think most people ever have them, but I think the time to have them is actually before you make that final commitment and when you're progressing in that direction.
You know what's crazy?
Yeah, go ahead.
So that some people, they'd feel more comfortable sleeping with someone before they would talking about their like finances.
Yeah.
Which is like, well, you know, it's different. Like, that's personal. They don't need to know my money. They don't need, but you know, with sex or whatever else is different, but it's like, when you think about it, there are people who are more comfortable putting themselves at risk of all types of things and engaging in coital activity, but they will not be comfortable at all having a conversation about money, and this is with someone that they're seriously thinking about being in a long term or the longest to term relationships with, which is kind of crazy when you think about it.
And, you know, I think it goes both ways. I think if you're going to, and I'm going to say, lack of a pun here, charge someone up about their credit or their history or their finances, I think you have to be ready, if not more ready, to volunteer and share that exact same information. What I'm not saying is that you go out here and ask everybody else for their credit score and their credit report and their financial history and goals, and then you have nothing to say in response, or you don't have your house either together or a plan for doing so. And I think more of it is a joint plan, which I think is the second section that I was going to talk about. And it's a hard conversation. And that's the whole point. I mean, I recognize it's a hard conversation, but I think the foundation that ties most, if not everyone, together is most of us have no idea about financial management. It's not like it's a standard high school program. It's not even a baseline for college. It's not a requirement. And most of us learn, if we ever learn, through trial and error. And so I think it's a difficult conversation. And I think maybe even a more difficult part of it is, and this came up in the article, is the more financially responsible person in a relationship, and I would say a serious relationship, should be in charge of the money. And that's difficult because the breadwinner might not be the most financially responsible person.
Oh, yeah, I can see that. Ball out.
And I think what's important for that to happen, because I know some people probably zoned out at that point, is it's an open conversation with a recognized investment of both parties. And I think when someone approached me, and I'm going to tell three different stories of how this has worked for me, it was more like a hidden agenda. So they're like, let me, you know all your money and finances and how much you make, and then you just have to guess or wonder what I'm kind of doing over here on my side.
Yeah, that sounds like salary negotiations. How much does the role pay? Well, how much are you looking for? Well,
I thought you were gonna,
you know, I was gonna say something else, and then I like choked and I just gave up.
It's all good. But I'll try to address this from both sides, but I do recognize my own bias that I am coming from the man's side. But I did date a girl, a good girl. Don't get me wrong. But
well,
her favorite saying, because she said it frequently, anytime I tried to rein in how much money we were spending, and we were just starting off in our lives, she would tell me, it's only money.
Hate
and that. that did two things. One, it kind of challenged me as a man, because I'm like, well, all right, so I guess I need to like pay for all these things, you know, like that's my girl, so I got to do for her, even though I don't know how I'm going to do for her. Oh, I got it. Let me run up all these credit cards. And I should have taken, I was younger, but I should have taken a like, nah, like actually it's not only money. And even if it was only money, it's only money plus interest now, because we can't afford this lifestyle that we're trying to live. Like, we are putting on a huge front and it will only harm the both of us. And I'm going to talk a little bit about how to alleviate all these situations in this final section, which is about budget and joint or separate. Then I kind of dated several people that I think fall in this category of I spend it and you figure out how to manage it.
Now,
so then it, go ahead.
No, you know, I really, you're probably going to explain what that means. I was going to be like, so I was going to ask you to give more context about that, but I realized how foolish it was to ask that before I've even given you a chance to talk.
Well, I mean, it's actually pretty straightforward. Is they spend whatever they want, and then I had to figure out how to cover it. And this happened, that's like more than once. That's actually probably more the rule.
So is that like on a joint bank account, or is that a joint credit card, or?
So no, I actually have only had one joint credit card. I don't believe in joint bank accounts. And I have some thoughts on that, but I probably need to share it on another show, because I'll get on the soapbox about that. But it's more like, okay, let's say we live together. It's like, all right, I know all these things cost bills, but who cares? And I know it costs money to go do X, Y, Z, but I'm going to do it. And so then it's just up to me to either be a word that I'm trying not to say on the show, because we're trying not to curse because it's a family show, or I just got to find a way to cover it. And I've done a little bit of both on either side. So I'm like, we're not going to do that. Or you're free to do that, but we're not going to do it. And I'm not, I mean, good luck trying to figure out a way to pay for it. But it's a really bad place to be when you always have to be the bigger person. And we've talked about that. In this case, you always have to be not only the bigger person, but the financially responsible person. That's a lot of pressure to place on someone. That actually seems to be the scenario that came up in this Ask Polly, where at least, you know, from her side, and we only have her side to hear, she's always the one making the financially responsible decision. But when you're in a relationship, you're impacted by the decision of your significant other, even when you don't want to be.
Yeah.
And in this instance, she said her husband's account was being garnished, and now 30% of their wages were gone. And I think it's difficult for people to wrap their head around 30%. Or they're like, well, that doesn't sound like a lot. But
sound like a lot to me.
Yeah, the average person gets a cost of living of about 3-5%, I think the estimate, assuming they get a cost of living raise at all.
So that's
10 years. That's 10 years of raises gone each month.
Yeah, that's kind of insane when you think about it. And the other thing, though, well, one, his wages were being garnished because he hadn't made any payments on his student loans, if I recall.
Yeah.
And so he just let it get like that's That's insane to me. Like, he was so irresponsible that he just like let things, like he would not do anything financially responsible. He would not maintain commitments unless she did that for him. And she kind of got to a point where she was like, you know what? I'm going to let everything go to crap. And then we'll talk about it because the lesson will be learned. And I don't think, and I mentioned that because you talk about being the bigger person. And sometimes people think being the bigger person could mean being passive at times when you really just got to be that jerk.
Well, that goes back to my point about observation and, you know, maybe I'm jaded or biased, but I actually don't think people change, like, especially when it comes to finances. If the places that people are going to change, money is probably the least likely place for them to change because there's so much emotion and on both sides with money's involved. And I think there's another saying that money, actually, the more money that you make, the more you become like yourself. Like, you don't become more financially responsible. If you're financially irresponsible, you make more money, you're just going to be more irresponsible. Like, it enables you to be more like who you are. It doesn't create this financially savvy Warren Buffett, you know, investment banker. It's just, no, if you are irresponsible with money, when you make more money, now you would just be more irresponsible with more resources. Right. You would just find bigger things to buy.
Yo, you just explained so many 30 for 30s about athletes and all these other folks who get more money and then they're broke. What's his name? Yeah. Not Paul Pierce, but the other dude who played for the Celtics who had millions and now he's just like in the middle of nowhere, like probably living in a shanty town and doesn't know how he lost it all.
There's so many stories I actually can't even tie. Anton Walker, I think, is who you're talking about.
Yes,
but Anton I can't even tie for a second who you were talking about because there's so many examples of that. But I mean, I get it, but I have a limit of sympathy for it in that, you know, we aren't taught how to manage our money. So the responsibility falls on ourselves. But if you're with somebody or you are somebody who doesn't manage money well, it is a personal decision and it's a personal choice. It's actually more rare that you're forced, like this guy who was getting his wages garnished, to make that choice for yourself. Like you you hit rock bottom before most like external parties come in and say, oh, yeah, hey, now that you're at rock bottom, well, you're going to file for bankruptcy or we're going to take all your money. We're going to garnish your wages. Like you really have to mess up repeatedly for a really long time. And that's why people are so good at hiding it, moving money around. I talked about the shell game of at least back in the day. I don't even know how it works now where you could mail a check and you just hope they didn't cash the check till Friday because there's not going to be no money there anyway. And it's just, you know, you don't know what you don't know. I think the difference is that here we have a responsibility and or an opportunity to learn. So, yes, there is ignorance, but there is no excuse to be ignorant. Because there's a wealth of information to learn about how to manage your money.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, and if you're listening to this, there's no excuse. I mean, we're like talking about it. So at least like look at your account. Like it's crazy to be listening to this like, oh, this is useful information. And then like not look at your accounts at all, not have any conversations, you know. And there's actually been listeners who've said, yo, I've been trying to talk to my significant other about this. And every time we try to have this conversation, it turns into a war. And I just had them listen to the show. And then we were able to actually have a conversation about it. So if you are in a relationship and you're dealing with someone who doesn't really want to talk about money or who doesn't know how to have a conversation about money, whether you have them listen to this show or another show, there are steps that you can be taking to move closer to being on the same page about this topic that's so taboo. Even in relationships where people have been together for like a decade, they still don't talk that much about money. Yo, I know people, I actually know a couple that's been together for like 20 years and they still struggle to talk about money, which is mind boggling to me. Like they've been living in the same house for like years. And I still hear stories of how they struggle to talk about money or how one thing does things with money and the other person didn't know about it. So it's not something that's limited to young people, however you want to define that. Like it's something that impacts people across age ranges. Happens to people in the 60 when you hear about the dirty old man who ain't poop. I was going to use another word, but because it's a family friendly show, I reverted to the most childish version of the word.
And that's actually a nuance that I think is difficult to give a ranking or a weight to. It's just the impact of talking about this very difficult conversation and subject, which I think is very important just to recognize the difficult in conflict inherent in the conversation about this subject. And that is, I dated maybe one person, at least that comes to mind, who was either at my level or better at managing money. And that's my last category here, is I'll tell you how to manage your money. And I'll be honest, it was...
refreshing?
No. Pain. It was painful because they were better at managing money, but I had never had someone try to tell me how to manage my own money that I wasn't, you know, employing as far as a financial manager.
Oh.
So basically, it was like, hey, let me take all your money. And here you, here is a, what's it called? When you get,
I'm trying to help, that's right. But I, when, I sorry,
like when
man.
You do chores for your family, you get a, like you give kids, but anyway.
Oh,
okay.
An allowance.
Yeah.
There
yes.
you go.
So basically I got an allowance of my own money.
That's kind of, you know, that can come off kind of insulting.
Yeah. It messed me up. And what happened, and I think why this didn't particular scenario didn't work out, eventually we both gave up, was not only was I getting an allowance of my own money, which is in itself a mind trip, then I had to ask for my own money because I didn't like the pittance of the allowance that I got, because it was like, yeah, here's all this. And it was like, it was noble intentions. And this is like my point is, I think you also have to have a conversation focused on the end goal. Because if you start having a conversation about who's doing what and I told you so and you're wasting money over there, like you'll never get anywhere and it'll always be emotional. But I think it's easier to agree on a joint goal. Like, and it could be anything. Like, hey, we want to get out of debt, or hey, we want to pay off this bill, or hey, we want to go on this vacation.
Buy a house or whatever.
Yeah, work backwards from there. Versus, hey, you are spending too much money. You suck. I'm good. Because that'll always turn emotional. And the, like you said, the ironic part about it is it'll turn emotional faster in a relationship than if someone gave you the exact same accurate advice outside of the relationship.
Well,
especially
yeah.
if it's coming from somebody, you know, professional or that you respect. But in that scenario, I was like, this is... I'm like begging to get my own money back.
Yo, some like, people need that though.
Like, yeah, it was a mind trip.
I mean, so there are people who they're that irresponsible that you do have to be like, look, I'm the money manager, and clearly, you know, there are some things that you're not as effective as doing at doing. Now, I haven't had to have this conversation with anyone, and someone's probably like, that's not how you have that conversation. I'm just trying to give a general example. And there are people where it's like, yo, you are a financial harm to yourself. I'm going to give you X amount of money on X over X period of time. And then you do with that what you will, because you can't get your ish together. So there are people who are at that level where they actually need someone to manage the money for them. Otherwise, they're going to spend it in a unpleasant way. Well, it'll be pleasant to them, but a less than fruitful way. So maybe someone has some type of habit or something that's going on where it's like, yo, someone needs to manage that person's money until they get a grasp of whatever it is that's going on in their life that's causing them to be so reckless.
Oh, I agree. And I have two or three friends that have made that work. But I think, and this is my last section here, is I think it needs to be open. It needs to be honest. And at least in the beginning, if not the whole time, it needs to be in your face, especially and probably more so for the person who's the less good financial. I'm trying not to say bad, the less good financially savvy person, because I think a lot of people are like, well, it's easy. Well, especially I think it's easy for people who are good with money or who are just naturally responsible or they have lists or whatever the case is, like this woman was describing herself in this story. And so it's hard for them to understand how somebody couldn't be. And so their natural and maybe even rightful, although inaccurate, assumption is they are sabotaging me. This is like a personal attack. They are doing this on purpose versus recognizing that they are just a different person. And that's why I think the couples that I've seen it done successfully, and when I've done it successfully myself, it's in our face. Like it's we're both on the same page as far as a budget. And we either know where all the money is going, or at least we know where the joint money is going. Whether that's a joint account or the money that's paying for the joint things, because I have my thoughts on joint account, given that, I hate to say it this way, but I think it's trust, but I haven't trusted anybody enough to have a joint account where we both have two debit cards and they have access to all of my money. And maybe I watched a casino too much or something like that, but I just have a fear of her like driving off to the car, draining the account in some emotional fury, and then I'm left with nothing. Like,
yo.
So I just haven't gotten to that level of commitment. Now I have a joint account for joint bills. Yeah, we both deposit in there and we both know where it's going, and it's for things that we're going to split. How we decide to split that, whether that's 50-50, 60-40, 70-30, 80-20. I don't care what your breakdown is, but I just haven't gotten to the 100-100 yet.
Nah. And that's where we're moving to now. We still got to set up that account where that's exactly what we're going to do. We're going to both put money toward it, and that's how we're going to pay off like rent and some of the other bills that come in. But you reminded me, and I can't remember if it was you who told me that story or you who tweeted I think you did tweet the story where this, I can't remember if it was the man or woman had like $50,000 in savings or something, and their partner took that money to pay off their student loans and like left the account at zero. You remember that? Right.
I do remember that.
Yo, that has haunted me ever since I read that. I'm like, yeah. Yo, I'm not saying Bubukins is going to take all my money and just like go, you know, pay off the student loans, but like, I'm like, yo.
Nice save.
That is, thank you very much. That is exactly the type of, like it takes an extreme level of trust and comfort with someone. I mean, at least for us, there are people who start trusting versus having their trust earned, and they may be more open to that sooner, which in some cases I'd call naivete. But for me, I'm like, yo, if we're going to be working out of this pool of money, I need to know that I don't have to worry or think about certain things. You could be the best person, you could be the most honest person, but there's a certain point where I have to reach that comfort level to say, you know what, this is all the money. It's now our money instead of just like, this is my money. And I'll be honest, right now, I still have moments where I'm like, yo, like I went to work, I dealt with the BS, like I earned this so that we can together do certain things or have a certain type of life. So I'm not at the point of when I get paid that we're getting paid. To me, it still feels like I'm getting paid and then I'm putting money into the account for us to do things.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
And that's my point. I mean, you know, I revisit these three things because I know we've jumped around a little bit. So the three that I would, in addition to the story, would be before you say I do's, talk about the I don'ts, have the hard, open, and honest conversation. And then I think one thing that I didn't see in that article is a budget. Now, most people don't even budget for themselves. So I'm guessing I'm going to have to extrapolate that to probably even less people, because then it's just multiplied by two, budget for their, like as a couple. And that is insane to me, because it's literally twice as dangerous, because unless you're both fiscally responsible, which is a statistical anomaly,
yep,
you're probably both just spending without knowing where the money is going. And then you're wondering why there's more month than money at the end of the month.
Nicely done.
And I think those three, and like I said, focusing on the goal or goals is more important than honestly who manages what, who, where it goes. Those are all helpful. But I actually think the most important is, why are we doing this? I think that's how you get people emotionally invested and committed to an idea. And I wrote here, it needs to be known. And more importantly, it needs to be repeated. And then it needs to be revisited. And then you should adjust it as needed, because I think a lot of people, we're just, you know, either culturally ingrained not to fail, but I say change the plan, not the goal.
Yeah. Yo, I think the goal part is so important, because one, it makes it less of an attack, but it does make the person more accountable, because when that person then makes a decision that's not aligned with that goal, you're not ruining the relationship, but you are setting like both of you back at the same time. So it's just a different framing where it's like, okay, if I go spend this $500, however much amount that was supposed to go toward this other thing that was supposed to move us closer to our goal, I'm actually pushing our goal out further. And so it kind of makes you more accountable of the other person, because you're both trying to move toward the same thing and you have something clear and tangible in mind. So I think that's a really key point.
Yeah, you said something there that I'll kind of wrap up with. I also think, and I might not be, Mr. Popular with this opinion, but I think there should be joint goals that the couple is working towards, and there should be goals that you work towards individually. And I don't know that those are equally as important, the individual goals, for it to be known, but I do think it needs to be communicated if the joint goal is going to be impacted by the individual goal. And I think when you work through a rotational system that incentivizes you like that, it's easier. And again, I just have to emphasize, even for myself, as someone who has literally done it, like, I'm not talking about in theory. I'm not talking about like my friend or my homeboy. There's not some anonymous person. Like, I literally did it and it's still difficult. Pretty much month to month. It's not like it just got easy. I'm like, oh man, I just know how to manage money now. I know how to get a debt. Like, okay, I'm just going to be responsible for the rest of my life. Like, it's hard. It's hard. It's a challenge. It's something I continue to revisit. And sometimes I just make outright dumb decisions. And then the next month, I'm like, huh. But the difference is, back in the day, instead of saying the next month, it might have been an entire year before I reevaluated that decision. Whereas now, 4 weeks later, I'm like, okay, what went good? What went bad? What do I need to change these 31 days that I didn't do the last 31 days? And maybe I'll get to a point where I do that as a 24-hour exercise. But I think most people, they go years. They go, and it's demarcated by emergencies or unplanned events or tax returns. And then they make all the New Year's resolution. Then they make all these promises and attestations and positive affirmations that are going to fail because they aren't set up to succeed.
Yeah. Anything else you want to add on this one before we close it out?
Good luck.
Yeah, and I think a lot of us need it. So jumping into the closeout, we want to thank you so much for listening to this episode of Paychecks and Balances. Now, I realize I didn't say this up front, but we had previously started a series about making career changes. And there was an episode that had been recorded before that I didn't get to edit that started to touch on that. So if you emailed us with questions about making a career transition, we have them. I'm going to try to email folks back this week while I'm on the East Coast. We have not forgotten about you, but yo, when life comes at you fast, sometimes you got to drop things, switch gears. And that's kind of what happened here. So again, if you support what we're doing, definitely leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. Super, super helpful for helping us reach more people, which means we can help more people. And if you have questions or topics you'd like to submit for future discussion on the show, you can hit us up at info@paychecksandbalances.com. And yeah, if you're in Chicago, definitely hit me up. Looking forward to finding a time and a way to connect with folks while I'm out there. That conference is going to be crazy. It was crazy last year. I'm sure I'll have some insights when I come back this year. Hopefully some more drops from some interesting people. And I'm actually hoping to connect with folks that can become a future guest on the show who can bring some perspective to some of these conversations. I'm sure this won't be the last time that we talk about money and relationships. I know that a number of listeners have asked that we cover the topic. So I'm sure we'll be back to talk about it again. And maybe we'll have a person or two on to add something to the mix. I know you had a soapbox that you were trying to not get on, so I might bring someone on to challenge you, brother, and I might just listen to y'all duke it out while I sip on a Jamba Juice.
Yeah, that should be interesting.
You're like, oh, I can't wait for that one. Jerk. So yeah, I think that is it, unless you have, because yo, I have to ask you twice. I know I ask you once before we end the segment, then I gotta ask you again before we end the show. Anything else you would add?
No, I'm good. Just people write in, let us know what y'all want to hear about, and if I need to expand or decrease on any of these topics.
Cool, cool. So we should be back the week of July 14th, I think that is. So until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.